Masechet Shabbat in memory of Marcel and Jack Shasho. Ruach Adonai Tanihim Began Eden. Amen. Daf Lamed Vav. Today's daf has been dedicated by Mr. Raymond Esses in honor of his wife, Monique. Today's daf is being studied Refuah Shneimar Rina Bat Rachel. Today's daf is being learned Le'ilu Nishmat Rabbi Baruch Rafael ben Miriam and Avraham ben Esther. Ruach Hashem Tanihem Began Eden. Amen. We are starting on Daf Lamed He Amud Sheni, and we begin three lines from the bottom. Actually, two lines from the bottom. We learned in the previous sugya that on the night of Shabbat they used to blow the shofar in order to signal to the people exactly that Shabbat is starting. There was six tekiot, six sounds. Used to be a tekiah, a teruah, a tekiah, a tekiah, a teruah, a tekiah. The last tekiah would signal that it was Shabbat. The Gemara wanted to understand the fellow that's blowing the shofar, what does he do with the shofar exactly after he finishes blowing with it, being that Shabbat seemingly immediately begins. The Gemara said, well, since he can't carry it home, he used to leave it on the roof itself. They had a makom tsanua there, where he used to store the shofar in that place. Implying that the shofar itself was mukseh. Mukseh meaning you're not allowed to move it on Shabbat. That's why immediately after he finishes blowing it, he has to let go of it and put it into the to that hidden spot on the roof where he was blowing. So the Gemara questions that. The Gemara says, Vehatanya. I'm actually going to start from three lines from the bottom. Shesham maniach shofaro. On the roof, that's where the Hazan would put the shofar. If he she'en metaltelin, lo et ha-shofar ve'lo et ha-soserot. Because you're not allowed on Shabbat not to move, not a shofar, and not a hatsotsrot. Hatsotsrot are the trumpets. Shofar would be like a long, straight horn. So both of these items are mukseh. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? Ve'atanya, didn't we learn in a braita? Shofar metaltel. The hatsotsrot ena metaltelin. We have a braita that clearly says, a shofar is not mukseh. Shofar metaltel. True, hasoserot ena metatlin. A trumpet is mukseh, but a shofar not. So what do you tell me that if he has to drop it and put it on the roof, it's not mukseh? You're implying that it's mukseh, it's not mukseh. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yosef, la kashya. No question. Can be yachid, can be sibur. It depends what type of shofar. If it's a personal shofar, then it's not mukseh. If it's the shofar of the rabim, of the community, which means the shofar that's used to announce Shabbat, that type of shofar is mukseh. Questions, what's the difference? If it's mukseh, it should be mukseh across the board. If not, not. What is the difference between yachid and sibur? So the Gemara says, Amar le Abaye, Abaye says, Ub yachid de mai chazeh, the individual shofar that a person has, what is its purpose that you're telling me it's non-mukseh? What is its purpose to make it non-mukseh? Which means it has a function. Since the end of the shofar is like a cup, so you're able to fill it up with water or a drink in order to give it to a child, which means it's like a cup. Which means you're able to feed a baby water with it. It's like a bottle. So therefore, it does have a permissible function, a shofar, and therefore it's classified as non-mukseh. So the Gemara said, well, just like a personal shofar has heter function, so the Gemara says, b'sibur nameh, the public shofar, it's also hazeh legameh letinok ani. You could use it to give something to drink to a poor baby, which means the sibur is obligated to feed the poor. And therefore, true, you're not going to give it to, you know, arbitrarily any baby, However, the Sibur's obligation falls is on a Zahani, on the poor people. So they were just like you tell me an individual shofar of a private guy is not mukseh, because he could use it to fill it up with water, to use it as a bottle. So too the shofar, the sibur, should also be non-mukseh, because it also has a permissible function. And once it has a permissible function, it should take it out of the status of mukseh. So comes the Gemara and says, Vetu, and furthermore, another question. Ha de Tanya, we have a braita that says, Keshem shemetaltelin et ha-shofar, kach metaltelin et hasoserot. We have a clear statement that says, just like a shofar is movable on Shabbat, meaning it's not mukseh, so too hasoserot, trumpets also are movable, are non-mukseh. So the Gemara says, Mani, who's the author of that statement? Comes out, we have three statements regarding shofarot and hasoserot. The first statement was that a shofar and hatzotzerot are mukse. That statement is found on Lamre Amud Bet. If you just want to see it, it is three lines from the bottom where we started today. The first statement is the fisheen metaltelin lo et shofar velo et hatzotzerot. Both of them are mukse. Second statement, shofar non mukse. Hasoserot, ye mukse. Third statement, shofar and hasoserot, both of them are mukse. So the Gemara says, we have three different statements, and each one contradicts each other. How are you going to answer this contradiction? So the Gemara says, Ela la kasha. No question. We have three different rabbis. Ha Rabbi Huda, Ha Rabbi Shimon, Ha Rabbi Nehemia. Let's go through all these opinions. Rabbi Yehuda has an opinion in the laws of Mukseh that he'll explain that a shofar is classified as a keli shemelachto le'isur. What is a keli shemelachto le'isur? A vessel that its primary function is for isur, which means that the primary function for a shofar is to blow it. However, the law by a Kli Shemelachto Isur is there is usage to this keli for a heter function. The shofar, as we explained, can be used as a vessel to hold a drink in order to give it to a baby. So therefore, the law of a Kli Shemelachto Isur is it's permissible to move it letzorech gufo or letzorech mekomo, meaning to use it for its permissible function. Or if it's in the way and you need the spot where it is, you'll be able to pick it up and move it and use the spot. That's called Tzorech Mekomo. Tzorech Gufo is to use it for its permissible function. Rabbi Yehuda agrees to that concept of Mukseh. He says that Kli Shemelachto Isur has permissibility, Tzorech Gufo, Tzorech Mekomo. So therefore he'll tell you, a shofar is movable on Shabbat. Mm-hmm. However, Chasoserot, Rabbi Yehuda is Mahmir. Because Hatzotzerot is a little worse than a Kli Shemelachto Isur. Sure, the primary function of a Hatzotzerot is what? Is to blow it, which would be Asur on Shabbat. But it really doesn't have any permissible function to it. You cannot pour water into a Hatzotzerot. It's just a straight horn. So therefore, he's the opinion that will say, Shofar non-mukseh, Hatzotzerot, yes, Mukseh. That is the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Shimon is a little more lenient in Mukseh. He'll say, just like Shofar is called the Kli Shemelachto Isur, and you can move it at Tzorek Gufo and at Tzorek Mekomo, so too Hatzotzerot is a Kli Shemelachto Isur, and you can move it at Tzorek Gufo and at Tzorek Mekomo. If you can find a permissible usage for the Chatzotzerot, or you need to move it out of the way, the Bishul will be lenient. So the statement that says, just like the Shofar is non-mukseh, so too the Chatzotzerot is non-mukseh, is Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Nehemia is the most strict regarding mukseh. Rabbi Nehemia holds like this. En kli nital ela letzorech tashmisho. A vessel cannot be moved on Shabbat unless you're using it for its primary function. For example, a knife. A knife is non-mukseh. A knife is a kli shemelachto leheter. It is a vessel that's primary function is mutar. You'll have to cut meat, let's say, on Shabbat. Rabbi Nehemiah holds, you can only use a knife for cutting purposes. Jeez, if a person wants to use the knife for any other thing, he wants to use it to get into a lock in order to open it up? No. It's mukseh for that. What do you mean by that? We said it's non-mukseh. Yes, yeah, non-mukseh for what its primary function is. That's a very strict opinion. For example, a spoon. You could only use a spoon on Shabbat to either eat with it or mix your pot with it. That's the function of a spoon. You want to use a spoon now in order to collect something, you know, in a crack or in a corner and stick it in there and use the handle. It's not made for that. It's made for mixing the pot or eating. So that's a strict opinion. So therefore, he'll say, what's the primary purpose of a shofar and a hatotzerot? The primary function is to blow it. So therefore, outside of doing anything besides blowing it, is forbidden. Now, since you can't blow it on Shabbat, and that's its primary function, so the ink klini tzorech tashmisho, and its tashmish is forbidden in this case. So therefore, Rabbi Hamia says the hatotzerot and the shofar are both mukseh. So we have three opinions to explain the three statements regarding shofar hatzot. Let's review it quickly. The first opinion we said is the biyuda. Shofar non-mukseh, meaning it is klishe melakto liisur. You can only move it the tzorech gufo and the tzorech mekomo, but that's what it means, shofar mitaltel. Hatzotzerot en mitaltel. Because that already, even though it's a klishe melakto liisur, since there's really no heter usage to it, so he'll say that is mukseh. The Bishop On is lenient. He says, just like the shofar, klishim ator liisur is mutal etzorek gufo v'sorek mekobo, so to hatzotzerot is klishim ator liisur mutal etzorek gufo v'sorek mekobo. Rabbi Nehemia, asur across the board. Ben shofar, ben hatzotzerot. Now, in Rabbi Nehemia, the Gemara is going to analyze the statement where we're placing Rabbi Nehemia is the statement that said, three lines from the bottom on the last page, the fisheel metaltelin lo et ha-shofar velo et ha-asoserot. Now, isn't it obvious if you tell me that you cannot metaltel shofar, of course you cannot metaltel ha-asoserot. Shofar at least has a permissible uses to it. You can use it to cup it, to use it as a, you know, for the katan. So why would that statement say that kashem lefi she'el metaltin lo et ha-shofar velo et ha-asoserot? If you can move the shofar, it's obvious kol she'ken ha-asoserot. So the Gemara asks, or actually says on the fourth line of our Gemara, as we continue, fifth line, umay shofar nameh ha-asoserot. What is shofar? When it says shofar in that statement, shofar actually means hatzotzerot. And hatzotzerot means shofar. Which means there was a certain time in history where the terminologies got switched. They would call a shofar hatzotzerot, and they would call hatzotzerot shofar. The terminologies changed. So therefore, that statement is really saying, Lom en metaltelin lo et ha-shofar. What is a shofar? A trumpet. Velo et ha-tzotzerot, that's a shofar. So it's giving you the lesser hidush and then the bigger hidush. Now where do we see that words got switched? So the Gemara is going to give us different examples of words that their usages got reversed. Gemara says, Kidrav Chazda. Like Rav Chazda. De'amar Rav Chazda, hane tlat mile ishtane shemayhu. There's these three terminologies, their names changed. Bechi harev Bet HaMikdash. After the destruction of the Bet HaMikdash. Hatzotzerta, shufra, shufra, hatzotzerta. That's the first one. The shofar was now called the hatzotzerot, and the hatzotzerot now became called shofar. So the Gemara says, "Lemay nafkamina." What's the halachic consequence as such? So you're telling me terminology changed. What's the halacha that comes out of this? We have a very big halacha. The shofar is Rosh Hashanah. We know on Rosh Hashanah the Torah says you have to blow a shofar. You have to blow the horn that comes from the animal, not a hatotrot. Hatotrot is pasul for Rosh Hashanah. So you have to know if an ama'aris comes to you and asks you, Hakam, what do we use for Rosh Hashanah? You have to tell him hatotrot. Because hatotrot now means shofar. So you have to know this name change. If you're going to tell the ama'aris, oh, you have to use a shofar. Well, shofar means hatotrot. He's going to go use a trumpet now, and that's pasul. So therefore there is a big nafkamina that you have to know the terminology change in order to know exactly what to use for the shofar of Rosh Hashanah. A next terminology that got switched was Arava Safsefa Safsefa Arava. The Arava is the one of the four species that we use on Sukkot with the Lulav. In English they call it the willow branch. Now Safsefa is like Arava, but it's Pasul really, because its leaves are rounded, and therefore the Gemara Sukkah tells us it's Pasul. Now after the Beit HaMikdash, those terminologies were reversed. The kosher Arava became called Safsefa, and the Pasul stuff was called Arava. So the Gemara says, Lemay nafkamina, what's the halachic consequence? Lilulav. You gotta know exactly what you're asking for. When the Ama'aris again comes to you and says, you know, what do we use for Sukkot? You have to tell him Safsefa. If you're going to tell him Arava, he's going to use the Pasul stuff. So you have to know the name change for the laws of Sukkot. Petura, Peturta, Peturta, Petura. A Petura is a large table. Peturta is a small table. Petura, Peturta. Those terminologies got switched. So they called a Petura, Peturta, and a Peturta, Petura. So the Gemara says, Lamai nafkamina. What's nafkamina? With tables. Which means we don't use any tables in any of our rituals. You can't say Shofar, so Rosh Hashanah, and Sukkot. What's the difference? So you tell me a big table became a small table, a small table became a big table. Gemara says, no, Lemeka homemkar. It's for business. Which means if you go to the store and you ask a guy for a Peturta, he's got to give you a big table now, because the terminology changed. And if he gave you the small table, you could take it to Beit Din and say, I ordered a Peturta. And Peturta means a big table. So there'll be nafkamina for business. The guy's got to sell you what you asked for. And therefore, since the terminology changed, you have claims now against him that you didn't order the small one, you ordered the big one, etc. Amar Abaye, Af'anu Nomar. We can also add a fourth terminology that got changed. Hublila bekase, bekase hublila. Now, if you want to look in your Pirush Chayes, you could probably see pictures of these two terminologies, one called the bekase, one called the hublila. They're actually stomachs of an animal. With kosher animals, they have four stomachs to them. And the food goes through all four stomachs as part of their digestion. The major stomach is called the keres. The keres is the stomach that the food goes into. And then it goes into what's called beta kosot. And then after beta kosot, it goes into another area that's called the hemses. And then it goes into the keva. Those are the four stomachs of an animal. If you want to look at it, you can see it in your Pirush Chai in the picture that's corresponding to 299 on page 68. You see over there the inside of the animal drawn in the diagram. You see the keres is the big stomach there, and that leads into the beta kosot. They call that stomach beta kosot because if you open it up and look in the inside, it looks like little cups in there. That's where the food is digested. And then it goes into another area called hemses. Actually, the word hemses, originally it was a Latin word. Latin word. That's what the Tiferet Yisrael says. The word hemses, he says, comes from the Latin word homsus. But the rabbis didn't want to keep the Latin terminology, so therefore changed it to hemses. In any event, you have to know that after the Beit HaMikdash destruction, these two stomachs that are involved in digestion by animals, the terminology were changed. Bekosot now was called the Hemses, and Hemses was now called Bekosot, Bekaseh. Now, what's the Nafkamina? So the Gemara says, Nafkamina Nemahat Shinimset Be'obi Betakosot. Now let's say you slaughtered the animal. Now you have to make internal checks to make sure that the vital organs are kasher, that they were not ruptured or punctured. If any of the organs are punctured, so it can make the animal a terefa. Terefa means that it's such a puncture or damage that the hakamim assume the animal would not be able to live for 12 months with such an internal wound, and that renders the animal terefa. You can't eat it, even though the shaita was kosher. But since the examination following shaita rendered it pasul, so it becomes terefa. So now, let's say you find a needle, a mahat, a pin. It ruptured in the thickness of the walls of the bekosot. Now, really, the betakosot, that stomach, is a very thick wall. And normally, if a needle was found through it, if it only pierced one side of it, one wall of it, it's kasher, the animal still. Because since there's a lot of, it's a thick skin, that stomach, it'll cover it up, it'll close it up. The bekosot is only pasul if the needle went through both sides of it. All the way through, exactly. Then already it's terefa. However, the himses, you want to look at the picture of the himses, you would see 297. Not the clearest picture, but that's what it looks like. It has ridges inside of it. Now, the himses is a very thin wall. The halakha is, if the needle went through even one side of the himses, it renders the animal terefa. That's the deen. So the himses were more mahmir regarding a mahat that goes through it than the bekosot, or the bekaseh, as they say in Aramaic. So now these terminologies changed. So you have to know, when somebody comes and says, "Es the halakha, hakam, a needle went through bekaseh through one side." Well, now bekaseh is really himses. So therefore we have to say the animal is terefa. However, if somebody comes along and says, the needle went through one side of the himses, well, himses is now bekaseh. So you have to know the animal is not a terefa. So therefore, since the terminology has changed, so you have to know that the gabe amahat that went through one side, is it going to be terefa or not? Comes the Gemara and says, let's read that inside. Lemay nafkamina. What's nafkamina? Whether himses, bekaseh. Lemahat shenimset be'obi betekosot. Temitzad echad keshera. ומשני סטדים טרפה. אמר רב אשה, רב אשה comes along and says, אף אנו נאמר, we'll also add another one, yet another terminology that has changed over the years. בבל בורסיף, בורסיף בבל, the country בבל at some point was changed and was called בורסיף. It was another country. And Bursif became called Babel. Okay, so Gemara wants to know, Lemay nafkamina. What's the nafkamina? Bursif, Babel, Bursif. So the Gemara answers, Legite Nashim. When one is writing a divorce document, when one is writing a get, the law is that on a divorce document, you have to write Shem Iro, and Shem Ira. Not only do you have to write the name of the people that are getting divorced, but you have to write where they come from, the name of the city where they come from. And therefore, you have to know the names of the cities. If let's say you're going to write it according to the old city, you're going to write that comes from Babel. That's not Babel anymore. It's called Bursif. So therefore, if you write the wrong city in the get is Pasul. So you have to know the names of the cities. Is it Babel? Is it Bursif? Is it Bursif? Is it Babel? So That's the way Rashi explains in one of his pirushim. Actually, Tosafot has a question on that pirush, because really in a get, you don't have to write the country. You have to write the name of the city, as we learned. Bavel is a country. So therefore, there really is no nafkimina for a get. You would never write Bavel in a get. You'd have to write the city in Bavel. That's actually the Rashba's question, and it was the first question on Pirush Rashi. The Haronim answer that possibly there was a city in Bavel, also called Bavel. So therefore, when you were writing a get for that city, and that became Bursif. So therefore you had to know for the city. It's not referring to the actual country of Bavel. Now she offers another interpretation. The law in Masechet Gittin on Daf Bet is when somebody writes a get outside of Eretz Israel, so, and now a shaliach, let's say, is coming to Bet Din to verify that the get was given to the couple. He's saying he was there, saw the get, he saw the proceedings. He must testify in front of Bet Din, b'fanai nichtav u'b'fanai nichtam. He must say, I saw the Edim signed it, they wrote it, they signed it, they gave it. What do they need to say that for? The get itself is a document. It has signatures on it, it has two witnesses. What does this guy have to testify that he saw it? Because outside of Eretz Yisrael, they were not really fluent in the law that giving of the get must be given for the sake of the couple, and has to be written for the sake of the couple, which means you don't have to write a get with somebody else's names that have the similar names of the couple, and then they change their mind, and you use it for that. It's got to be written specifically for the couple that's getting divorced. It has to be given for their sake as well. That's called lishma. It's got to be given for their sake. So therefore, the one that brings the get over, or they're trying to verify it's kosher, there's a guy comes, I was there, I saw it, the sofer wrote it, it was signed in front of me, everything was done legitimately. Now, that's outside of Eretz Israel. In Bavel, they were baki, however. In Bavel as well, they knew the laws. When you brought a get from Bavel, you didn't have to verify. It was understood, once the get was kasher, the document was kasher, finished. You assume that it was given the right way. Babel, they were baki in the law of Lishma. They knew exactly this law. So you didn't have to verify with a third agent that said, I saw it in front of me, it was signed. So that big nafkamina. So you have to know what's Babel and what's Bursif now. Because if a get comes from Babel now, well, Babel is no longer Babel, it's Bursif. Now you got to verify the get with the Fanai Nechdam and Fanai Nechdam. However, Bursif is Babel. If you get a get from Bursif, they know the dinim, and therefore you don't have to verify it. We could assume that the get is kasher. So therefore you have a few nafkaminot by the name change of the city. So let's just review the terminologies that changed. You had Hatzotzerot and Shofar. That was one. You had the case of Arava and Safsefa. You had the case of Petorah and Petorta. Abaye Ered Bekaseh and himses, the stomachs of the animal, and the Asher, Ered, Bavel, and Bursif. The five terminologies the Gemara concludes with that changed throughout the years. Hadran Alach, Bameh Madlikin. Now we start, Be'azat Hashem, the third perek of Masechet Shabbat. Just as an introduction to the perek, in order that the first Mishnah and the subsequent pages go a little smoother. Our Perek is going to be discussing the laws of Shehiyah and Hazara. What is Shehiyah? Shehiyah means actually to leave. To place and leave. Leave what? Leave the pot of food on an oven from before Shabbat. Person is not allowed to cook on Shabbat, that's obvious. But he wants to have hot food. So our Mishnah is going to discuss, is it permissible if a person wants to take his food and he wants to place it on an oven before Shabbat, leave it on Shabbat and it'll cook through Shabbat. You're not actually doing it on Shabbat, you're putting it on before Shabbat. That's called Lishot Shehiyah. There's another terminology called Hazara. Hazara means literally to return something, which means on Shabbat, let's say, a person takes his pot off the fire and now serves himself, wants to put it back. He wants to have food for later. Obviously, we're talking about where the food is cooked, but now we have discussions, can you put pots of food back on the fire on Shabbat or not? So Shehiyah basically happens Erev Shabbat. It's leaving it on the fire, and Hazarat takes place on Shabbat. I'm giving you general overview. There are opinions even in what I just said. I'm giving you the general overview where everybody agrees. Now, there are different type of ovens. For our Mishnah today, you have to know the oven that's called the Kira. Some ovens retain more heat, some less heat. It depends on the way they are configured. If you look at your Pirush Chai, and picture 300 in Perikira, you'll see the configuration of the oven that was called a Kira. Basically, it's like a rectangular box. In the box, they would put coals, and on top of the box, there was space, enough space to put two pots, as you can see, in 301. They would put like a metal board, let's say, over it, and you could rest a pot over the kira. For that matter, in 302, you could also put the pots in the kira itself. So there are different ways you could use a kira, either actually sticking the pots inside, so it's resting on the coals itself, or you could place it on top. The point is the kira has room for two pots on top. Now, another deen that we have to be familiar with is the different fuels that can be used. Certain fuels, like let's say straw, hay, stubble, those items when you burn them as fuel, to fuel your kira, immediately they disintegrate. They don't eventually turn into a coal. Other items, however, as you burn them, they begin to turn into a coal, and they just keep on burning, and like they have embers, where they just keep on generating heat. So therefore, there's different types of fuels that can be used. So again, you have Shehiyah, you have Hazara, you have a Kira, that's the oven that we're talking about. You have the fuels that we're talking about. You have the fuels that just burn out, like straw, then you have the other type of fuels that turn into coals. Another factor that's going to go into this is going to be the level of how much the food is cooked. There's different levels. It can go from anywhere from raw to fully cooked. So in all these issues, when we discuss what's permissible to make shehiyah on, what's permissible to make hazara, a factor is going to have to be, right, we figured out the oven we're talking about. We figured out what type of fuel is being used, because that's a factor. Now we're going to have to figure out, well, how much cooked does the food have to be for any of these things to be permissible or forbidden? That's another factor that's going to play into it. Another factor that plays into it as well is, what type of food is it? Is it a liquid or is it a solid? The way the Gemara will call a liquid is hamin. Hamin is a liquid. The way it will call a solid, it will call it a tafshil. So there's a lot of very important facts that you have to know when somebody would want to know, for example, if we go away to the end of the halakha, is shehiyah permissible? Which means, can I put a pot on the fire Erev Shabbat? Well, first you have to know, what type of oven are you using? Number two, what is it? Is it a tafshil or is it hamin? Number three, what type of fuel are you using? Because based on the fuel that you're using, it's going to make a difference. You also have to have another factor. If there are coals, for example, in the oven, it's obviously going to be issues of stoking and concerned about my coming to stoke coals and things like that. So one of the ways that the rabbis would maybe alleviate that issue, that you won't come to stoke, is doing what's called girifa. Girifa would mean to clean out, let's say, the oven from its coals. Ligrof would mean to shovel out the coals. Now, even though you shovel out the coals from the kira, it still maintains a certain amount of heat. So ligrof would be a way to alleviate issues of coming to stoke. Another issue would be is liktom. Liktom would mean not to take out the coals from the kira, but to actually just sprinkle them with ashes over it. And by putting the efir, ashes, over those coals, either that will serve as a reminder, or you'll remember, oh, yeah, this is Shabbat, because your coals are not normal coals anymore. Now they're sprinkled with ashes. Or they'll actually cool down the coals, and therefore you're showing that you're not interested in really stoking them, because before Shabbat you went and actually cooled them down by putting ashes over them. So that would be the concepts of girifa or ketima. Girifa is to shovel the coals out, or ketima would be to place ashes over them. Now let's go read the Mishnah based on just principles. Again, we just gave you terminologies. Now let's plug in these different terminologies that we discussed. Kira. Kira, we know what a kira is already. Kira is that rectangular oven that has ability to put two pots on top of it, and it has fuel in the cavity itself. Shesikuha. Shesikuha is you used a fuel with what? You fueled it. Bekash ubegebaba. Kash and gebaba, according to Rashi, let's say, kash would be straw, and gebaba would be stubble. What's the difference? So if you want to just see on your pictures, on the next page, I guess that's picture 305. Okay? You look at Aleph, that's the part of the wheat that you cut, the stalk that you cut. That is called, according to Rashi, kash. Okay? The little piece that remains in the ground after you cut the tail of it, that little piece remains in the ground, that is called gebaba. In the old French, that she says, they call that estobla. That would be the English word today, stubble. Now, exactly what Rashi says, Tosafot says the opposite. You know, so what Rashi calls kash, Tosafot calls gebaba, what Tosafot calls gebaba, Rashi calls kash. So it's a machloket. You know, which one is this, which one is that? But for our purposes, you have to know both these kash and gebaba have something in common. They don't produce coals. As we know, you burn straw, it burns immediately. It doesn't leave any coal afterwards. So it says, kira. Shesikua bekash ubegebaba notnin aleha tavshil. So you're allowed to place a tavshil, a food, onto such a kira. Okay? That's straightforward. You could place on top of a kira that has such a such fuel. Begefet ubaitzim. Ah, but if the fuel is coming from gefet, what is gefet? That she tells us the residue of sesame. After you press the sesame seeds to make oil, now you have, let's say, that residue. They would use that as fuel. They would use a lot of things in the olden days in order to fuel their ovens. Gefet would be one of them. Also, let's say the olives. Let's say if they would press the olives. So you have that, the olives. It's the meat of the olive that was pressed. Could be thrown into the kira. You light it, and it lights. Only difference is gefet and etzim, wood, is the obvious fuel. Both these things have something in common. They produce coals. So now, automatically, without knowing too much, these are going to be more of a problem. Because anything that can produce a coal, you're going to come into issues of stoking the coals. So the Mishnah says, begefet uba etzim lo yiten. You shouldn't place things on such a kida ad shiyigrof. Either until you remove the coals outside of the oven, out of the kira, or ad shiyitin et ha'efer, or until you cover it with ashes. So the basic principle is, on coal-producing items, you got to do something to the coals. On non-coal-producing items, nothing, no problem. Now, Bet Shammai umrim. Bet Shammai say. Hamin avalot tavshil. Liquid items, but not tavshil, not solid items. Ubet Hillel umrim hamin vet tavshil. Bet Hillel will say both hamin and tavshil. Now, what is this machloka discussing over here? We just told you that on Erev Shabbat, if you want to make shehiyah, let's say, and you have coal-producing items, gefit and etzim, the only way to use such an oven is you got to clean it out before Shabbat. Mm-hmm. Got to clean it out. Now, even after you clean it out, Bet Shammai is still strict a little. He says the only item will allow you to place on this is what? Hamin, is liquid items. But tavshil, but a regular food, even Bet Shammai will say, even though you garufed it, and you katumed it, and you did whatever you had to do to him, doesn't matter. Still, a tavshil is going to be forbidden. Bet Hillel will say no. Once you're ready, you either take out the coals, or you cover the thing with ashes. What's the problem? Hamid, ve tavshil, put whatever you want on the oven before Shabbat. Okay, so that's the mahloket between Bet Shammai and Bet Hillel, that after you made garuf or katum on an oven, what things can you put on? For practical purposes, Bet Hillel says, put anything. Bet Shammai says no. Hamin velo tavshil. And we'll see the difference. Last part of the Mishnah. Bet Shammai omrim, notlin aval lo machzirim. Bet Shammai says, you can take things off the oven on Shabbat, however you cannot put back. Now we discuss Hazara. Once you take it off, according to Bet Shammai, can't go back, can't put it back on the oven. Bet Hillel omrim, Bet Hillel says, no, af machzirin. Under certain conditions, you take it off, you could put it back on. Okay, so that's the last part of the Mishnah. Now let's review quickly outside the parts of our Mishnah. The first part of our Mishnah discussed Kashin Gevava and Akida. There it seems we really have no restrictions on Erev Shabbat. Kashin Gevava, non-coal producing items, you want to put the stuff on Erev Shabbat, it's okay. Keep in mind, we didn't discuss yet how much the food is cooked or not. That's one variable that we left out for now. But we're discussing Kashin Gevava Mutar. Gefit and Etzim, depends. You made Girifa, you shovel the stuff out, or Ketima, Mutar. What's Mutar? Machloket. Bet Shammai says Hamin velo tavshil. Bet Hillel will say Hamin ve tavshil. Last part of the Mishnah regarding Hazara. Bet Shammai says no Hazara doesn't exist. You can't put stuff back. Bet Hillel omrim yazor, put stuff back on Shabbat, no problem. Now the Gemara. Ibaya lehu. The question was raised in the Bet Midrash. Hay lo yiten. When it says on the second line of the Mishnah, when you have gefit and etzim, coal-producing items in the kirah, lo yiten, do not place on it until you clean it out. Well, let's analyze ourselves. What does lo yiten mean? Now, really, we have two ways of explaining lo yiten. Lo yiten, I can explain like we explained it in interpreting our Mishnah, is referring to Shehiyah, meaning Erev Shabbat. Do not place it on the oven, to let it sit on the oven through Shabbat, until you clean it out. Lo yitin means lo yishot. Do not place it on the oven. But if I wanted to, I could explain lo yitin as lo yahzir. Do not return. I mean, maybe this is talking about on Shabbat. And it's telling me that if you have an oven with coals in there, you cannot put stuff back to the oven. You took it over on Shabbat, you want to place it back? Coals, you can't do it. So lo yiten now is a vague terminology. It can either be referring to shehiyah on Erev Shabbat, or hazara on Shabbat. The options would be lo yiten, meaning lo yisheh, meaning on Erev Shabbat you cannot make shehiyah unless you clean out the coals, Or it could mean no. Shia, I'm not okay. Shia, you want to do Erev Shabbat, do whatever you want. I don't care if there's calls, I don't care if there's anything. We weren't talking about Shia. Shia, we're lenient. But you know what we're talking about? Lo Yiten means Lo Yahzir. On Shabbat, which is more strict, obviously, when you took a pot off, you cannot put it back if there's coals there. Which means, unless before Shabbat you took out the coals, then Hazara on Shabbat would be Mutar. So the Machloket, what Lo Yiten means? So the Gemara says, Ibayilu, the question was, Hai Lo Yiten, Lo Yahzirhu, does it really refer to Hazara? But Shia then would be permissible under all circumstances, even if there's coals there, because the Mishnah never discussed Shia according to this option. When the Mishnah said you need to make Garufe Katum, you need to shovel the coals out, what was that trying to alleviate? It was trying to alleviate a Hazara issue, which takes place on Shabbat. Which means you want to return something back on the oven on Shabbat? Make sure there's no coals there. But Lishot, to leave stuff through Shabbat on the oven? I don't care if there's coals, no problem. Umani, and who would be the author of our Mishnah? Hananiah, he. The Tana of the Mishnah then would be a rabbi called Hananiah. Why, what does Hananiah hold? The Tanya, we have a bright, Hananiah Omer. Hananiah says, Kol shukemacha ben drosai. Anything that is partially cooked to the level of macha ben drosai. There's a machloket exactly how much that is considered cooked. It's either, let's say, half cooked or third cooked. Bottom line, macha ben drosai is the a level of the minimal amount of a food that's cooked that's edible. It means that we would call it, let's say, you know, very, very rare, let's say, but you know, where it's already edible to some people. The reason why it's called macha ben drosai is because there was a group of bandits that were called drosai. And they would always have to eat their food very rare because they were always on the run. So therefore, they nicknamed that, you know, very rare food that's edible after them. They called it Ma'akal Ben Drosai. The point is, it reached a state of edibility. Again, Kol Shu Ma'akal Ben Drosai, Mutal Lishot Al Gabe Kira, you could place it on a Kira, Shehiyan Erev Shabbat, Afapi She'enu Garuf Ve'enu Katum. Oh, very good. So you see, Hananiah clearly holds, when it comes to Shehiyah, so long as the food is basically cooked, leave it on an oven, I don't care if there's coals there, I don't care if anything. What's his logic? It's cooked already. Why should I come to stoke coals if it is already cooked? However, Hananya says, if there's coals, now you want to come back on Shabbat after you took it off, and you want to put it back on? That you can't. Why would he forbid it? It's cooked already. What are you worried about? No, that already looks like you're cooking. That's called mehzikim bashil. You know, Shabbat, and you go take a pot, and you go stick it on a kira, and it's got regular coals burning in there. That already looks fishy. Looks like you're doing something that's not kosher. So therefore, he holds that the garufe katum issue only was to alleviate hazara, but sheya is mutar. And therefore, read the Mishnah, boys, on the third line. Lo yiten ad shigrof would mean lo yahzir ad shigrof. Odilma, back to the Gemara, lishot tenan. Now, when it says lo yiten, it means, like we learned, sheya. V'i garufi katum in, and only if you clean out the oven, or you put ashes over the coals, mutar, ilala, v'choseken lahzir. And if Shehiya needs Garufi Katum, all the more so Hazara is going to need Garufi Katum. Because again, Hazara is more serious. Because Hazara you're doing on Shabbat, and you have issues over here of it looks like you're cooking, etc. So therefore the second option in learning our Mishnah would mean, let's read inside, second line of the Mishnah, Lo Yitin, meaning do not place things on the fire before Shabbat, Shehiya, Ad Shigrof, until you clean out the coals. Now this is a more strict opinion. This would be the opinion of the rabbis that argue on Hananiah. They would say, just like you need Garufi Katum for Hazara, you need Garufi Katum for Shehiya as well. So those are the two options, how to learn. Tashema, so give us, okay, we'll bring proofs now, how to learn the Mishnah. Tashema, come and listen. Mediktani tre babe b'matnitin. And the fact that we have two cases in the Mishnah. What's the two cases? Obet Shammai Omrim Hamin Avalot Tavshil, Obet El Omrim Hamin Vet Tavshil. That's the first case. Bet Hillel and Bet Shammai argued the what shehiya, what is permissible to leave on the oven from before Shabbat. Now, second case was Bet Shammai Omrim Notlin Avalot Mahzirin, Obet Hillel Omrim Af Mahzirin. Then the second machlok of Bet Shammai Bet Hillel the Mishnah was Hazara. Bet Hillel says Hazara is permissible. Bet Shammai says Hazara is forbidden. So we have two subjects. The Gemara says, "Iyamar pishtamal lishhot tenan." If you learn that our Mishnah was discussing shehiya, then the Mishnah fits in very nicely. Haki katani, kiras shisikua bekashu begebaba. If you put these kashu begebaba, this straw, this hay, and this stubble, mashin aleihat tavshil, no problem. You can make shehiya because no coals. Begefdu ba'etzim. If you're using the coal-producing items, lo yisheh. You cannot make shehiya on Erev Shabbat, ad shi'igrof, or ad shi'itin efer. Good. And even if you did that, umahin mashin, still, what's permissible? Bet Shammai omrim, hamin avalot tavshil. Bet Shammai will tell you only liquid items, but not tavshil, even after you made garuf or katum, or bet Hillel omrim, hamin vet tavshil. Good. So now we finish the shehiya. V'chi echi de paligi bilishot. And just like we have a machloket bet Shammai bet Hillel regarding shehiya, paligi nameh bilazir. We have a similar machloket. Are you allowed to make hazara? Shebet Shammai omrim notlin avalo machzirin. On Shabbat bet Shammai will say you can take it off the fire, but you cannot put it back. Ubet Hillel omrim af machzirin. And bet Hillel will say no. If you made garuf katum, you can even put stuff back, which means the Mishnah makes a lot of sense if you learn it. The Mishnah is in shehiya. Again, let's read it outside. Actually, let's read it inside the Mishnah. When the Mishnah says, "Kiras shisikua bekashu begebaba," non-coal producing items, notnim aliyat tavshil on Erev Shabbat, make shehiya, no problem, because what are you worried about? No coal, no stoking, no nothing. Oh, begefdu ba'etzim on these coal producing items, lo yiten means lo yishe. Do not make shehiya Erev Shabbat until you take out the coals. Okay, and even if you take out the coals, Bet Shammai will tell you, Hamin, permissible. Tavshil, no. Bet Hillel will tell you, no, you took out the coals? Well, everything should be permissible, no problem. Hamin vet Tavshil. Okay. Second point. We have a machloket on Hazara as well. Bet Shammai will tell you, once you took out the coals, I don't care. You cannot make Hazara on Shabbat. Finished. Hazara does not exist. And what? Bet Hillel will say, no. Once you took out the coals, Hazara will be permissible. So you see, according to this logic, it makes sense to learn the Mishnah is Shehiya. And then we discussed Hazara. However, the Gemara says, Ela'i amart la'azir tena. If you learn our Mishnah is going on Hazara, Hachi ketari. Then you're going to have to learn the Mishnah the following way. Kira shisikua bekashu begebaba. Again, learn the whole Mishnah in Hazara, meaning on Shabbat putting stuff back. Kash kebaba, mahazirin aliyat tavshil. No problem on Shabbat to put stuff back, because there's no coals over there. You know, on Shabbat already these items are burnt out. So you took something off the oven on Shabbat, you want to put it back on the kira? Mutar. Begevdu ba'etzim, lo yazir. Talk about Hazara now. On Shabbat, give it on etzim, lo yazir. Why? Because there's coals over there. That looks like you're cooking. Ad shigrof, ad shiten efer. Umahen mahazirin. And what now that we're discussing Hazara, what could you put back? Then we have a machloket Bet Shammai Bet Hillel. Bet Shammai omrim, hamin avalot tavshil. He'll tell you, hamin you can put back, but not tavshil. Bet Hillel omrim, hamin vet tavshil. Bet Hillel will tell you, no, Hazara, once already you made garuf and katum, Hazara you can put back anything. Now, last part of the Mishnah. Bet Shammai omrim, notim avalot mahzirin, Bet Hillel omrim, af mahzirin. Bet Shammai says you can't make Hazara, Bet Hillel says you can make Hazara. Hatu lamali. What do I need that for? Which is, we discussed all this in the cases already. What are you giving me now, the third part of the Mishnah, telling me, Bet Shammai says you can't make Hazara. You just told me exactly. You just told me that if you make Garuf and Katum, Bet Shammai says you can put Hamin, but you can't put Tafshil. Now you tell me, Bet Shammai Omrim and Mahzirin. What do you mean? We just discussed Hazara according to Bet Shammai. Or Bet Hillel Omrim. Af machzirin. We just discussed it. Yes, Bet Hillel says hamin v'tavshil. So if you learn the Mishnah in Hazara, the Mishnah is really superfluous. Let's review it outside. When the Mishnah says, Again, learn Al Mishnah that the whole discussion is Hazara. Mishnah starts off. You have Erkira with Kashin Gebaba, no problem. Doesn't produce coals. On Shabbat you want to be Mazir? Put it, no problem. Give it to Aitzim? Oh, give it to Aitzim. Lo Yazir. When it says Lo Yitin, second line of the Mishnah, Lo Yitin, it means Lo Yazir. Don't put it back on Shabbat because it's coals there. Yeah, so what do you want us to do? You have to make a garuf or katum. Either take the coals out or cover them with ash. Do something. You got to make a shinu. You have to make it the difference. You have to do something. Okay. Now I made it. Oh, you made it? No problem. What do you mean no problem? Well, Bet Shammai will tell you it'd be permissible to put hamin, but not tafshil. And Bet Shammai will tell you, no. Once you did garuf or katum, do whatever you want. Hazara, it's permissible. But we were not discussing shiyah, by the way. Shiyah? I don't care if there's coals, I don't care if there's anything. The discussion of the Mishnah is limited to Hazara on Shabbat. However, Erev Shabbat Shehiyah, Mutar Legamri. No issue. Okay, good. Last part of the Mishnah. Bet Shammai Omrim Lo Yachzor. Lo Yachzir. Bet Hillel Omrim Af Yachzir. Where is that coming? We just discussed all the ramifications of Hazara. What are you ending the Mishnah telling you? You should know. Bet Shammai holds no Hazara. Bet Hillel says yeah Hazara. That was the whole discussion that we're discussing till now. So it's a little difficult to explain the Mishnah in the Hazara mode. So the Gemara answers. Le'olam emalach le'azir tina. I can answer you. Hazara, and it's following the opinion of Hananya. V'hasure mi'chsira v'achi ketari. And the Mishnah is actually missing some words, but once we insert those words,
everything's good.
Everything will fit in. How? Kira shesikua bekashu begebaba machzirin alei atavshil. Fine, that stays the same, which means you have kashu begebaba hazara mutar begefedu ba'etzim lo yazir ad shigrof ad shiitin et ha'efer. Gefed ha'etzim, then you have to make garuf or katum. Now here's the extra words we're adding in. Aval lishot. But to make shehiyah, mashin afapi she'enu garuf enu katum. Which means when it comes to shehiyah, according to Hananya, according to the way we learn the Mishnah, this option, shehiyah is mutar even if there's actual coals. Oh, now the Mishnah is, umahin mashin. Okay, so when you have actual coals in the oven, you tell me shehiyah is mutar. Anything? Umahin mashin? No, Bet Shammai omnim, hamin avalo tafshil. Bet Shammai will tell you only liquid items, but not food, not solid items. What would be the difference? Now let's analyze Bet Shammai for a second, because he would say, listen, we're talking about that as coals there, because according to Hananya, Shehiyah, it's permissible with coals. So Bet Shammai will tell you like this, liquid items, there's no suspicion that I might come to stoke the coals, because liquid items, the more you stoke the coals, the more it burns, and the food evaporates, and you're going to ruin it. However, therefore, no gizra by hamin, but by tafshil, by food, the more it gets cooked, usually on majority of foods, it's called mitztamek v'yafelo. It gets more cooked, and it gets better. So therefore, there's coals there. We're talking about shiyah with there's coals. So therefore, there's a gizra that what?
You may stoke.
That I might come to stoke. So Betelah makes a difference between hamin and tafshil. Hamin, permissible. Tafshil,
not permissible.
Forbidden. Now, u'betelah omrim, Betelah says, no, you have a kira. I don't care if there's coals over there, shehiyah, everything permissible. Hamin, then tafshil. Last part of the Mishnah. Ve'ach hazara da'amnilach. And you should know, in the beginning of the Mishnah, when we told you that if there's coals, you can make hazara, la'devre ha'koli. You should know that that's not everybody's opinion. Ela machloket Bet Shammai u Bet Hillel. Shebet Shammai omrim notin velo machzirin, u Bet Hillel omrim af machzirin. Which means, let's see the style of the Mishnah now. The Mishnah is discussing Hazara. One more minute, gentlemen, just to finish the style of the Mishnah. The Mishnah is discussing Hazara. That means when the Mishnah said, you put kash gebaba, beautiful. Make hazara, no problem. When Shabbat comes, not any coals over there, put whatever you want back. Oh, however, if you used gefet and aitzim, don't put stuff back. Why? Because there's coals. Coals, you have stoking issues. How do I alleviate that? Just take out the coals. For Shabbat, take out the coals. Goref or kotem, or put the ashes on top of it, beautiful. That then Hazara would be permissible. But what about Shehiya? Oh, Shehiya. I mean, discuss Shehiya. Shehiya, even if there's coals, you can leave this stuff on Erev Shabbat, no problem. Even on Shehiya, that we said you could leave with coals, you have Mahloga Bet Shemai Beterel. Bet Shemai says, I'm only allowing you to leave stuff on Erev Shabbat,
liquid,
but I'm not letting you put solid. Bet they will say, no, no, Shehiya, liquid permissible, solid permissible, everything permissible. Now, we want to go back to one more point the Mishnah says. Incidentally, that which we told you a second ago, that Hazara is permissible if you make Garufa Katum, that's only according to Bet Hillel. It's not according to everybody, because Bet Shammai says Hazara is forbidden even if you made Garufa Katum. So the last part of the Mishnah is very necessary now. Don't think what we said originally, that Hazara, if it was Garufa Katum, Hazara is permissible. Don't think that's the Kula Alma. That's not according to everybody. That's only following the Shita of Bet Hillel. But Shitat Bet Shammai, Bi Asur. So I'd like to explain, Rabotai, the two options, how to explain our Mishnah, because both those options now are still viable options. The Gemara really did not commit to either option, because both can make sense. The first option of the Mishnah is that the Mishnah is discussing when it says, if there's coals, lo yiten, it means shehiya. Coals, you cannot make shehiya, which means you need to make garuf to allow shehiya to take place. Mm-hmm. Now, if that's on Erev Shabbat shehiya, all the more so, you cannot have coals for hazara, and it goes without saying. Right? Shehiya, v'kol sheken, hazara. So the Mishnah would be learnt like this. Gefet and Eitzin, lo yiten, meaning lo yishot, unless you made Garufa Katum. And even if you made Garufa Katum, Bet Shammai still strict, Hamin ye, Tafshil no. And Bet Hillel will say, no, you made Garufa Katum, Hamin, and Tafshil no problem. Now, when it comes to Hazara, as well, Bet Shammai will say, you cannot make Hazara, even if it's Garufa Katum. But Bet Hillel will say, no, Garufa Katum, you can even make Hazara. Very good. Second option would be according to Hananya. Really, the Mishnah is telling you now, when it comes to Shehiya, you don't need anything. You don't need Garuf, you don't need Katum. The Garuf and Katum in the Mishnah was just discussing for Shabbat to put stuff back on the Kira. Then you need Garuf and Katum. But for Shehiya, even if there's live coals in there. Oh, but when there's live coals, we have Machlok and Bet Shammai Bet Hillel Gabe Shehiya. Bet Shammai will say only Hamin at Tavshil. Bet Hillel will say Hamin Bet Tavshil. Oh, and you should know that which we said above, that Hamin that Hazaraz Mutar. If you take out the coals, that's only Bet Hillel. Should Bet Shammai Omrim and Machzirin or Bet Hillel Omrim Machzirin. So the Mishnah can really go either way. That is a tremendous nafkaminaya. The difference between the two styles is, and it's going to be after, we're going to have to analyze as we go through these sugyot. If you hold like Hananya, he's going to tell you that you could place food on your ovens before Shabbat, there's no restrictions. Which means, so long as he said, it's edible. There's the minimum level of edibility called Ma'akad Ben Drosai, put it on an open fire. I don't need to take out coals, I don't need to... Shehiya is permissible so long as the food is somewhat edible going into Shabbat, no restrictions. But if you go like the other opinion, meaning like the rabbis that argue in Hananya, even putting pots of edible food on a fire before Shabbat, you can need to do something. Either you're going to have to garuf it, you're going to have to katum it. Now that is talking about ovens of the olden days. Now you have to start applying that to the modern day gas ranges and ovens. How do you goref and how do you kotem? But according to the rabbis, you're going to have to do something, which you think about it. We always put pots on our ovens before Shabbat. We always heard that. That's what you do. Before Shabbat, you put that's Shehiya. If you hold like the rabbis, you're going to have to say, what do I have to do to this oven here in order to allow me to keep edible food on it going into Shabbat? If you hold like Hananya, once the food is edible, do whatever you want. I don't care what you do. I have an open fire, no problem. So that's exactly, just so you have a crystallization here of what the Nefka Minot would be. But at this point, the Mishnah could be going like either Hananya or like Rabbanan. Baruch Adonai Le'olam.
Amen. Amen.
In the previous Shiurim and in the upcoming Shiurim, we are and have been referring to different pictures of the different cases that the daf is referring to. We are using a sefer called Perush Chai. And therefore, if our listeners want to purchase the Perush Chai and follow along as we announce the numbers in that book, where these pictures are, it would be a tremendous aid in order to understand the cases more clearly.